So, you know, I want to talk about an interesting subject tonight. I want to talk to you tonight about the, you know, there's a concept of a hiddur mitzvah. You have a mitzvah, you have to do it with an extra hiddur. So, does that a hiddur of the mitzvah have a value in us? That's what I want to talk to you about. You know, you go and you buy a Sefer Torah. And when you get the Sefer Torah, you take a look at it after you buy it, and you say, you know, this is not really mehudah. So what happens? So now you want to pay the sefer. So you pay the sefer for the price of the sefer Torah minus the hiddur. How much is the hiddur of the sefer Torah worth? Well, maybe you can say, no, I ordered a mehudah to get sefer Torah, so I'm going to take absolutely nothing. You know, I'll just try to throw it into this question. I'll throw it at you in a totally different light. You guys are into buying a nice etrog for Sukkot? Spend some good money on it, right? There are people that spend $500 on that clothes before Sukkot, right? Alan's already waving his head, he says, I don't want to hear it. Some people do that. So, let me
tell you. Only ones that let you know about it when they get to Sukkot.
That's right. You know, what can I tell you? You know, there's an old Yiddish expression, that if the people would shake the etrog in the house and do the kaparot in the shul, so the etrogim would be like nuts, you know, with the size of the etrog, and the kaparot would be like, you know, big animals, you know, because, you know, whatever is done publicly, usually, you know, gets a greater pursuit. No question about it, it's 100% true. But can you imagine somebody went and he comes over to me and he says, you see this etrog? I spent $500 on it. Look how beautiful it is. And you being so powerful and so, you know, your opinion being so strong that it's a waste of money, right? That's what you're basically saying. You're unimpressed, right, Alan? You would do something of that sort. You take it and you say, well, off the wall, what do you do? And you get so angry and you just throw it across the room. And what happens? So you break it, it becomes pasul. Now you got to pay him for it. You got to pay it, right? Okay, how much do you have to pay him? $500? So you do something very simple. You say, listen, I damaged your throat. You go that morning. Go on, I'll get you another one. You go that morning. You do it, you know, your style. I don't know what your style is. I'm sure it's more than that. But you go to the lower east side. You find one on the table for $20. You go to the rabbi. The rabbi says, kasher. Hey, I damaged that throat. I paid that throat.
You damaged $500.
You have to pay $500. So you're telling me that the hitter is worth $500, right?
I damaged and it's wrong. That has any do it.
You say the same thing
with the throat that has value of $500.
So that's the value. I think the etrog is every kosher etrog is worth about 20, 30. That's the value of a kosher etrog. You decided to pay for the hiddur another $470.
My God,
this
is the holy bastard.
I don't know.
You want to pay $470? You bought a custom-made suit, cost $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
I come and I damage it.
Right.
Can I give you a $200 suit?
Of course not, it's a $2,000 suit. How do you compare it to them?
There's a value in it, it's wrong also.
What's that? That's not to be so simple, by the way, because we should do a shiur one day on that, about when you pay somebody for damages, it has to be not replacement value. It's rather the value that he can sell it for.
Okay.
The truth is, the worst investment you can do is when you buy a suit for $2,000, the first time you put it on, nobody else is going to wear it. If I damage that suit, they probably have to pay you about $100 or $200 just so you can sell it for. Mm-hmm. It's not replacement value, by the way. So that's already, but that's a discussion of its own. Well, I'm not going to go into that discussion right now. But listen, it's an interesting discussion. By the time we finish the shiur, we'll rediscuss this question. Okay, and I expect everybody to say, no, $500 damages. Wait, slowly, I'll show you that it's not so 100%. You know, I just find it very fascinating when it comes to hidurim. You have one person's hidur is the other person's, you know, it's totally unimpressive. I read it last week, a beautiful write-up. There was the Rizbaz. The Rizbaz was Rav David ben Zimri. He's the one that wrote the Pirish on the side of the Yerushalmi. He was the Rav in Tzfat at the end of his life. Very, very famous. So this Ritvaz was a close to a Rishon, was about 500 years ago. This is the Ritvaz. He lived about 150, late 1800s. In fact, he was a very famous rabbi, was a big Talmid Chacham. So he writes that he one year had the schut to be for Pesach in Volozhin. And he, you know, being a dignitary, he got invited to the two Sedarim. The first Seder he got invited by the Beis HaLevi, because he was one of the Rosh Hashivas in Volozhin. And the second Seder he got invited to the Nesiv. Those are the two Rosh Hashivas in Volozhin, and he had the one Seder by the Beis HaLevi, and the other Seder by the Nesiv. Just such a beautiful write-up. I should really bring you photos of it, just to read it. It's so beautiful to read. He describes the contrast of the two Sedarim. Everybody knows the Beis HaLevi was very, very frum, and he had very, very many chumras. So he describes how he ate by the Beis HaLevi, and the Beis HaLevi right away is running home because it says you have to make kiddush before, you know, you can't delay so the kids shouldn't fall asleep. And he runs home, and they bring him a kos to make the first kos of kiddush, and right away he's upset because the kos is not big enough, and he needs a greater chumra, a bigger shear, and they bring him a bigger kos, and he's concerned that the wine is not strong enough, so you're not used to it, the wine. And they finally make kiddush. He's concerned they didn't say the words properly. He's repeating the words, and it's such a seriousness by the whole Seder. And he describes the Sifiyasi as Mitzrayim, and you know, the way they such a serious type of conversation. And then he says, finally, they come to the Achilat Matzah. And he, the way he describes it, he says, which is the Matzah they brought out, he says, he's talking about the Chumrah, you know, the Chumrah, the Hiddur. He says, the Beit HaLevi was very concerned that there should be a tiny bit of Chametz in the Matzah. So he said he took a look at it, he brought out to everybody matzah with ashes. That's what he brought out. He brought, do you get the matzahs, the real brisket matzahs? They're ashes, that's what they are. And he, in his mind, is thinking, is this, you know, hiddur, is this kasher or not kasher? Because it's not matzah anymore, it's ashes. You know, you can't be going to the mitzvah of achilas matzah with ashes. And the Beis HaLevi, he says, then it came to giving the shear, you know, the shear, he says, he's never seen such a shear of matzah. It was like a couple of matzahs he gave him. And then finally it came to the Murr, he says he never in his life got such a shear of Murr. He says it was like the greatest shear you can imagine. He says, and then finally, there was Shulchan Aruch. He's all excited, the Shulchan Aruch, and the big slave says, oh, chatzot, and that's it. And they took all the food back in, and again, they're giving out the ashes to everybody. And finally, there's a big shear of ashes again. He says, finally, sort of at the end of the stage, he says, there'll be some happiness, and everybody breaks into song, you know, they're singing Chasal Siddur Pesach. And the Beis HaLevi looks around and says, oi, so many mitzvot, so hard to keep all the mitzvot. Who knows if I did it properly or not? That was the end of the Seder. So the next Seder, he went in the Tziv, and the Tziv had a perpetual smile on his face. And he came in, and they were singing and dancing, and everybody was saying nice words to each other and kidding around, and the meal was delicious, you know. So, you know, so somebody once asked the Beis HaLevi, what's with your Simchat Yontif? You have an obligation to have Simchat Yontif. So the the Beis HaLevi's comment was, the Beis HaLevi made the following comment. He said, nobody has as much Simchas Yontif as I have for my chumras. That was the comment that he made at the end. But the point is, you know, it's important to analyze when you talk about a hiddur, right? Any hiddur, what is the value of a hiddur? What value does a hiddur actually have? So let's take a look. Take a look at the Maamar Mekaymus and first start with we're going to start with page number 3. I want to read to you a Gemara in Gittin on the Nun Dawar on the base. So we'll first talk about a very classic question. And the question we're going to discuss is, what happens if a Sofer writes a Sefer Torah, and after he tells it to you, he decides that the Sefer Torah is not kosher. He tells to you the Sefer Torah, and after he sells it, he says it's not kosher. What you bought is not kosher. So he still has the nemunis, is trusted to say that, you know, I sold it to you, but I sold to you something that was not kosher. What's that? Well, how is it not kosher?
Why did I trust it?
Why did I not trust it? Because it's in your hands. How is he trusted?
There
are certain rights in the Torah you only have when it's still by you. For example, to say Eidus, right? As long as it's B'yotcha, you have rights. Once it's in another person's hands, you have no rights anymore. What rights is... You bought a Sefer Torah, you paid for it, so forever the Sefer can come and tell you that it's not kosher? After you paid him? You shouldn't technically be allowed to do that. So what are the rules? Look what the Gemara says. Gittin, page number 3, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis, The Gemara tells us the following story. There was a certain person that came to Rav Ami, and Amalei said to him, right, you got it on the top of the page? Amalei said to him, say for Torah Sheketabti Mutwani. You say the Torah that I wrote for the following person, Askurit Shaloi Loi Ketabtim Lashmon. Every time you write the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Sefer Torah, you write Hashem's name, you have to write it the Lashmon. You have to be Mechave that you're writing it for the name of Hashem. He says, listen, I wrote to you a Sefer Torah, it looks beautiful, but I want to know that every time I wrote the name of Hashem, it was not Lashmon. So Omar Lay, so Rav Ami said, Sefer Torah B'Yazmi, who has the Sefer Torah? Did you give it yet? Did you transfer the ownership or not? Amalei B'Yad Lekeach. What does it mean? It's in the hands of the Lekeach, the purchaser has it. Amalei, so he said to him, listen, Neman Ata Lahasas Korcha, at this point you have the ability to ruin that you're not going to get paid, because when he heard that you sold him something that's not kosher, he won't pay you. But at this point, you don't have a right anymore to say that the Sefer Torah is not kosher. So the Sefer Torah is kosher, but on the other hand, you want to get saved. You're not going to get saved, because now you admit it's not kosher. That's what the halakha is. Amalei Rav Yirmiyah said, just one second, Nei dehitzit schar askoros. Okay, so don't pay him for every time in the Sefer Torah he wrote Hashem's name. But schar the Sefer Torah kula mi hitzit. The rest of the Sefer Torah is kosher. Just all the times he wrote Hashem's name, it's not kosher. So pay him for the rest of the time, the rest of the Sefer Torah that he wrote. Now obviously that doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, because if the Sefer Torah is not kosher, the Sefer Torah is not kosher. So what are you paying him for? A Malay, and yet, Shekol Sefer Torah is not kosher, like Ksuvus Lishma, and in Shavaklum. The Sefer Torah has no value, it's not kosher at all. Trek the Gemara asks, let's get a kumis. What's a kumis? Take a feather and take more ink. And whenever it says the name of Hashem, just redo it. And this time, do it lishma, v'lekadshe, and be mekadoshet. And now the Sefer Torah is going to become kosher. So the Gemara says, Keman, who is that going according to? Name of the Loik Rav Yehuda. I would think it goes not according to Rav Yehuda. It's not like we learn today, Shal Yisrach Lichtoy. Es Hashem, the person who used to write the name of Hashem, v'nefcham Lichtoy Yehuda. He intended to write Yehuda. V'toh, v'loi hitl ba'dalis, he just forgot to put the dalis. So, but he has the name of Hashem. So what does he do? But he wrote it for the name of Yehuda, not for the name of Hashem. So Mava Olav Kumas in the country. So you just take another feather with more ink, and you just rewrite the name of Hashem, and this time you have the appropriate Kavanah, and the Sefer Torah is Kasher, the Rebbe Yehuda. The Chacham Lai, the Chacham Fei, it's kosher, but Ein Hashem in Hamukha. The Sefer Torah is not Mahuda, it's not a Mahuda to get Sefer Torah. Don't say Rabbi Yehuda. Come, Rabbi Yehuda. I will be chol askora. I was the coolest Sefer Torah. Loi mishim the michtik in the nuna. So he says, you want to know something? You understand right? But the Sefer Torah is not going to be a Mahuda to your Sefer Torah. Why? Because it is going to be a menumer. What does a menumer mean? Spotted, right? Like a leper. Because if you say every time it says Hashem's name and you rewrite it, the Sefer Torah is going to have terrible blotches. And it won't look very good. So it's not going to be a Mahuda Diga Sefer Torah. But the bottom line is, does the person have the ability that they should not pay him for his value? Absolutely, they don't pay him. But is it kasher? Absolutely. Why? Because since he already transferred the ownership, he lost his right to say edus. As long as it's still in his possession, he has right, and he can say that the Torah is pasul. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now, what happened? It's interesting. When he originally said what he said, what was his intention? His intention was that the Sefer Torah should be pasul, and he should get paid. How is he going to pull that off? Because the truth is that he wasn't going to say the Sefer Torah is not kosher. He just said the Sefer Torah is not muhuda, right? So therefore he thought he'd still get paid. But how about if he said something that when he said something, he clearly created a situation that they won't pay him? So then already he has an amonis to say that the Sefer Torah is not kosher, because or else he wouldn't say it if he's not going to get paid at all. So that's the next case in the Gemara. So the next case is, Tahudu, the story, the Oslo Kamadu of Avo. Somebody came in front of Rav Avo. Amalei, Sefer Torah, Shekatavti, Leploini, Gevilin, Shaloi, Leibadachem, Leshmon. I was the parmes, the parchment, I did, Shaloi, Leshmon. So the Gemara tells us, So he says to him, Amalei tekatar biyad mi biyad lakeach. Where is it? It's in the hands of the purchaser. Amalei, no, but now we'll believe you. Why? Yitoich sha'ata ne'mon lahafsit schorcha ne'mon ata lahafsit sefer tzorcha. So the Gemara says, what's the difference? So the Gemara says, there, it's a machloket, it's a disagreement, it's a question of hinder. He doesn't realize it's going to become totally pasul. But here, where he knows clearly that when he says that I was mi'abed the iris, shaloi l'shma, what's going to happen? Are you going to pay him? Absolutely not. So therefore he takes the risk. And what's the risk he takes? Of losing all the money. If he's willing to take that risk, then we believe him. Okay, so we got a pretty straightforward Gemara about a sefer that comes, and the sefer after the sefer Torah is out of his hand, has a problem, he says that it's not as kosher as I thought it should be. So if the aegis that he says is that if the sefer Torah is no good and he's willing to waive his money, then you believe him and the sefer Torah is no good. If he's only, on the other hand, saying something that's in between, that the sefer Torah is still going to remain kosher, and if we think he's still going to get paid, then once it's out of his hand, he has no nemana. Okay, pretty straightforward Gemara. And if you go back one page to page number 2, you take a look at the Mechaba, where the Mechaba in Sifhei rules exactly like the way I just described the Gemara. Okay, so Mechaba in Sifhei says exactly this point. And before I continue into the subject, I just want to share with you a very interesting Shavuos Yaakov that's brought in the fifth Teshuvah. And the Shavuos Yaakov says the following. Very good, we say, that I'm believed as long as I'm losing all the money. Right? And if I'm not losing all the money, when am I believed? As long as it's in my hands. But once I put it into your hands, I lose my nemana. So the Shavuos Yaakov says, but I said, I'll take this a step further. How about if I sold it to you, and you sold it to a third party, so then even if I say something that will make me lose my money, I won't be believed anymore. Why? Because my kalicha edus is only regarding myself and the person I sold it to. But once he sold it to somebody else, then I already have no value in my kalicha of their money, in my trustworthiness. Okay, so those are just a few important points to know, and I'll just throw out one more interesting question, which the Ramah discusses, and it's not very negayah today. The Ramah says that even though the Sefer Torah at this point is not kosher, he says, on the other hand, you still have to pay him. You know what you have to pay him as? The amount that a chumash is worth, because they gave you a chumash. Now, just today, can you imagine, say, who is keeping the Sefer Torah? And then they used to use the Sefer Torah as a chumash. So therefore the Ramah says, the Sefer Torah is still have to pay. Now the Chumash and the Sefer Torah was not much of a difference, so they had a chesed. But today the difference between the Chumash and the Sefer Torah is just, you know, like hundreds of times the price, so that's not really going to be a issue. Now I want to ask you an interesting question. We'll start with a few questions about Sofrim. You know, Sefer Torah, Mezuzah, Tefillin. I go and I write a Sefer Torah. You commission me to write a Sefer Torah. And I write half of it. And then I decide I'm not interested in writing anymore. So I come over to you and I say, listen, I wrote half of it, pay me for half of it. Can I do that to you or not? What do you say? If I back out, I don't want to finish. Yeah, no, why not? Well, are you saying specifically by a safe etc., or are you going by all jobs? By all jobs, if I do 50% of the job, so pay me 50% of my job.
We learned already before that no one wants to take on a half of the job.
Okay, so you can say Yod El HaTachtoina.
Okay, so you're not talking about that. Why can't you say that?
But can you say I'll pay him for Yod El HaTachtoina? Still means that I'll see what it takes to hire another person.
Okay, so, is he losing out anything?
Shlomi Meishiv, on page number 3 in that Shuva, discusses this question. I just want to throw out an interesting point that he makes. He says that the buyer can object, and the buyer can say, I don't want to take the Sefer Torah at all. Why? Because he says that the Sefer Torah will not look symmetrical, because every Sefer has its own style, there are certain chumras, there are certain ways of having certain letters on the top of the Amudim, right? Vavei Amudim, right? There are certain letters you put on the top of the page, and he feels very strongly the Shlomi Meishiv, that therefore, since the Sefer Torah will not, like similar to the account that the Gemara says, it'll be the number. It won't look right to Sefer Torah, starting with one Sefer and going to another one, that he says that even though in other areas of business you do have a right to say, it's Yod El HaTachtoina, and okay, you'll take the loss as the person who did the work, but he on the other hand feels that by a Sefer Torah you can't do that at all. Now, you understand, because he says it just won't look right, what? No, because usually when there's two workers and you back out, I can pick up, the new worker will pick up wherever you left off. He feels that a Sefer Torah is something which you can't pick up when the other person left off, because it just won't look right. The Sefer Torah has to flow. That's the truth of the Shelley Matrix that I bought. And that's not really the question. I want to get into a few different discussions, but I just wanted to make a few interesting points before we get to that discussion. I want to throw out another interesting question, which the Maram Shik, and this I have on page number 4, it's a very interesting question. The Maram Shik is going to deal with this question. And the question is as follows. The Gemara says a very interesting point. The Gemara says that you tell the Sefer, when he says that he went and he worked on the iris, he worked on the parchment, and he says it was Shaloi L'Shma, what ability does he have to ruin the schar that he shouldn't get paid? That's what the Gemara tells him. But does he have the ability? Why? The Gemara, the Maram Shik asks a very interesting question. Why don't you turn to him and you say, look, I gave you my parchment. Do you have my parchment? You went and you wrote a Sefer Torah that's not kosher? Reimburse me and pay me for my parchment. Think about that question. The Gemara simply says that he has an emunah to be master nischar. He says that was ma'ad.
The Gemara is talking about that you gave him your parchment.
Okay, so very good. So firstly, maybe you're not simply saying that he has no parchment.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went and you gave him the parchment, what would you say? So he has to pay you for the parchment. So Maram Shik says, first points out this point, and he says you're right, from the Gemara there's no clear proof. You can't figure out the answer from the Gemara. But Maram Shik has a very interesting concept. Maram Shik wants to say that maybe he doesn't have to pay you for the parchment. You don't pay him, but he doesn't have to pay you for the parchment. Why? Because we consider it a hezek she'enoi nikar. What did he do? He went and he gave you a Sefer Torah, a beautiful Sefer Torah, but the Afkara is the Shaloi L'Shma. He was ma'abed the Sefer Torah Shaloi L'Shma. Now you take a look at the Sefer Torah. Who can tell if it's kosher or not kosher? It's the hezek she'enoi. That is what the Maram Shik wants to argue. No? And it's a hezek she'enoi. The damage that he did to the parchment, to the parchment, to the gevulin, is a hezek she'enoi. It's not obvious. You have to, the damage you have to be able to see. So? What's that? But when you look at the Sefer Torah, can you tell? Now let's go slowly here. Firstly, 1 second, we had a very interesting machloikus when it came to shefting an animal, and you ruined it, right? So the Ksoit asked a very interesting question. We got to talk about it. What does the Ksoit say? Now we have to go back to that Ksoit that I wasn't doing, so we'll talk about the Ksoit here. What does the Ksoit say? The Ksoit asked the question, so you shefted the animal, the Shechita was not kosher, right? So what's the problem? It's a hezek she'enoi nikar. So now I just want to say one thing. The word those that learn that there is someone that is chai in a hezek she'enoi nikar. And you know who that is? A shomer. Right? We have such shittas that say that a shomer does have obligations even when it's a hezek she'enoi nikar. Now let's think about this. When a person is a woman, a person works for you, and he has an obligation to give you back a beautiful job, that he is a shomer. So now he has full obligations to you. So if he's a shomer, then a hezek she'enoi nikar should be chayav. That's one possible angle. But now let's deal with a second possible angle. The second possible angle is as follows. Remember what the Ksoit said? The Ksoit said something very interesting. The Maram Shik doesn't say this. The Ksoit says that you have an animal, right? So he asks the question, hezek she'enoi nikar. So the Ksoit says, look at the animal. Is the head chopped off? It's a hezek nikar. What's the reason why usually you want to have the head chopped off of your animal? Because your animal's kosher and you can eat the meat. But if the animal's not kosher, so the hezek is that the neck says, the head is chopped off. So according to the Ksoit, if we'll view our case, you might be able to say the same argument. What can the argument be? The argument can be, we'll take what you said, but we'll just stretch it a bit further. If the Sefer Torah was kasher, so then the writing is a hiddush. It's beautiful to have writing on parchment, it's kasher. But if the Sefer Torah is not kasher, you can't read from it, so your writing is scribbling. Right? You took my item and you scribbled on it. What's right? Fine, it's the Sefer Torah, it's very beautiful.
It'll be like
But it's a damage. Like a chumis? Alright, you want to have like a chumis? That's an interesting question.
But the karmic then. So,
it's a question, because Tosfos says it's chilish by Tzitza, that you can pass it by. But you're right.
No, the head is chopped off. Animal is.
Yeah, and then it's not kosher, so the Tosfos says that's the damage.
But then the head is chopped off either way. But if it's not kosher, then.
Then the head being chopped off is a damage. That's what the Tosfos says. So take it and apply it to our case. If you have the Sefer Torah is kosher, so it's beautiful to have a parchment written on. But the Sefer Torah is not kosher and it's all scribbled on. We're called scribbled because it's not kosher Sefer Torah. I can use those words, right? That's a very, it's interesting. Mamshik asked the question. And it's interesting. I picked up the same thing you picked up, Simon, right away. That the Gemara is not necessarily speaking about that case. I mean, who says that's the case of the. And he wants to say, that it only says it only on that case. For the Lashon of the Shas, he wants to prove it. It's not a perfect proof. Okay. I'll just talk about one more case before we go to our fascinating case that I promised I would discuss. The case when you damage the estric. And you see, here it's going to be very interesting. You have a sefer, and if a person went and spent $50,000 and he has the most mahudidig sefer Torah, and somebody comes and damages it, so when you want to pay him back, how do you pay him back? You pay him back for a sefer Torah, or you pay him back the $50,000 sefer Torah? That's the question. But before I just go to that, I want to just make one quick and very interesting point. There is a Rashba that the Rashba I have here is on page number 5. The Shalom Tshuva with the Rashba is very interesting. You know, when they finish the Sefer Torah, there's a halacha, you have to do a Hagah. What does a Hagah mean? You need to review the whole thing with a sofer and see to make sure it's done to perfection, right? That's what you need to do. So the Rashba says it depends on the community. In some communities, the sofer does that extra check, so then he has to pay for it. In some communities, who has to do the extra check? Not the sofer, but rather the computer. It's interesting, even by the computers, they didn't allow the computers to do everything. They only allowed the computer to check for chaserot v'yeserot, the extra letters, because that's a human. See, it was a big issue, by the way, you know, because with everything becoming automated, you're cutting out the human, and the human's not making a living. So what happened was, they wanted that the sofrim should still do the checks for issues like broken letters and these things. But the double word or a double letter, that's the most complicated thing. You know, there are all kinds of tshuvot written. A person, Reuven, sold the Sefer Torah to Shimon. Then he found out that one time he wrote by accidentally the name of Hashem one extra time in the Sefer Torah. You know how you deal with such a Sefer Torah, by the way? That has Hashem's name? You can't erase it. It's an extra time Hashem's name. You could even remove the urea, or in the old days, you used to cut it out, that's what they used to do. Mm-hmm. The Heshiv Moshe, the Yishon Moshe, all kind of truth, if it's kosher, it's not kosher, if it's Mahud, it's not Mahud, it's all. They cut it, look at it. Big Shiloh, the Shas, the Taz, it's a major Shiloh, they should do it that way now, but they used to cut it. Yeah, the simplest way is to just replace the whole urea, that would be another, if you had that choice. Right, but in the old days, they didn't always have that choice.
You feel.
Every panel of three is one. Whenever you do hagwi, you're supposed to make sure that the urea is at the center, right? So that means.
Now,
go ahead.
People who do not trust him to be self-conscious because of the personal aid, or would apply to anything?
Well, this is what we're discussing. If the situation is that the psul is a. Oh, you mean if you don't actually see the psul?
Actually, what happened was Rabbi Yaakov, Chassim, started writing too early. He jumped the gun and pulled his bike. He jumped the gun. His father realized that he went and brought back home to see what that was sold, not to get from it. So maybe what you're saying, he had no feeling to that.
And so, in the he wrote before the Bar Mitzvah?
I didn't realize. In other words, like, in Europe, they didn't necessarily keep track of the birthday.
So he wrote it before the
forgotten.
Either cut from that road, so you have an obligation, no? I mean, yes. But it's a different question. Who created the damage, the cotton or the adult? As it is, the remote. The remote is an interesting tshuva, but a cotton that damaged, if his parent has an obligation to pay off those damages or not. The remote says technically no. He said, what do they shemai and eat? The remote even has another discussion, if the cotton, when he gets older, should pay off damages that he created before he became an adult. But very interesting, you know, that case. Listen, I guess it was from the Mishnah of Hadin, they wanted to do the right thing, so they made sure to do it in that way. But it's a very interesting point. So I'll just quickly mention what the Rashi says. The Rashi says that it's very interesting what he says. He says it depends on the Mokum Shanahagu, it depends on the minig of the place. In some places, the minig is that the cipher himself does it. In some places, the minig is that you get a separate cipher to do it. He says, even if the minig is that a separate cipher does it, so that cipher has no responsibility, if he does it, he can go and charge the buyer as the Yoyed Bonisah Haveri Vishpichai Shaloi Bishus. But the Aruch HaShulchan writes, by the way, that if the buyer says, I don't trust that cipher, and he wants to do his own Hagah all over again, so then he doesn't have to pay because he wasn't Mishpiach him at all. That's basically the Rashi on page number 5.
What were those words?
The Hagah.
The words were...
Yoyed Bonisah Haveri. When I go down to your field, Vishpichai, okay. I make it more valuable, Shaloi Bishus, without permission. So you have to pay me like a Yod El HaTorin on my behalf, which means the cheapest you can get that value for, that's the amount that you have to pay me. I mean, I once had a very interesting case, which I once had a very interesting Torah. There was a Sefer sold a Sefer Torah that he took a look at it afterwards. Every Vav in the whole Sefer Torah from the beginning to the end was only written 3/4 of the way down. It was not a Yud, it was kosher, it was not a real Vav. It was right in between. Every verb in the whole Sefer Torah. I guess he was an amateur and he was starting out. He wasn't that good at it yet. Every verb. Now it became a whole issue. Somebody had to go through the whole Sefer Torah from the beginning till the end to make every verb longer. He went to one rabbi who was a big expert in Stam. This rabbi said, Koshul Mahajan. He went to another rabbi and the rabbi says, no good, you have to do it. So this person who sold the Sefer Torah said he believes like the first rabbi. The person that bought the Sefer Torah, he believed like the second rabbi. And it was, you know, quite a situation there to figure out. Who had to pay to go through the whole Sefer Torah from beginning to end, to pay to lengthen every vav in the whole Sefer Torah from the beginning to the end. What? There were more factors. I'm not gonna go into the actual. There was quite a bit more to the situation. Okay. Now, Rabbi said, let's deal with by far the most interesting question, which we said we're going to deal with, and that was the final question.
What's that?
No, I'm going to talk about one more question. That question is, what happens when I go and I damage?
You hit the mitzvah, he said, right?
You hit the mitzvah. So I'll just say over the case one more time. You buy yourself a drove, you spend $500 on it, right? You spend a fortune, right? Somebody buys the nicest one, and then a person goes and damages it, so he owes him a new drove. So he comes in a Yontif, 10 minutes before Sukkot, before the Chag, and he just gives him another etrog, which is worth $20. He says, I damaged your etrog, I take you back an etrog. Is that a good one? Fear or not fear? Let's take a look. Let's figure out the answer to the question. Page number six, all the way on the top. Let's read the interesting Gemara in Bava Kamma. Okay, look what the Gemara tells you. Boy, your Rava. Rava asks the following question. If a person says, Hare olai oilo, I have an obligation to bring a carbon oilo. Vehitfresh shor. And what does he do? He's mafresh a shor, an ax. He bo achan, another person comes along, vegana, and he steals the carbon.
Okay.
Six. Page number 6 on the top of the Gemara.
Oh, but you've turned the seven.
Oh, right. Let me take the.
Seven.
Let me take the right one from on the same page to the other. Some reason the computers every week. Oh, on 7. Good. Everybody, the computers very often on one. I don't know why. The way they print out. Good. Page 7. My mistake.
Yeah.
On the top of the page.
The obvious makbul.
Yeah.
Shimon.
Yeah.
Okay,
Boy Rava, right, a couple of lines. Okay, good, you got it?
Yes.
Page number 7. So it says on the top of the page as follows. Boy Rava, Rava asks the following question. Hare olai oilo. A person has an obligation to bring a carbon oilo. Vehifris and his mafris, shor ashor. Ibo achar, another person comes along. Vigona. What does he do? Steals. Mi poter ganev nafshe bekeves le rabbonim. The rabbonim say that for a kodmah you only have to bring a keves. Or, if a lot of men die, all you have to bring is an oif. So a guy goes, you know, Alan, like you mentioned before, if you do it for the public, he's mafresh, he has to come to the base immediately because of his avera. So what does he do? He brings, in spite of a very big avera. So what does he do? He brings this huge animal. And what happens? So the other person now stole it. But it's not around, because if it was around, the question wouldn't start. Then it's the hatred of taxation. So obviously the animal's not around. But listen, he says, there are opinions that for an oila, you can bring a bird. So he comes in, he says, listen, I owe you a carbon oila, here's a bird, and bring it. Acceptable? Isn't that our question with the etog? Pretty fair, right? So what does the Gemara say? So the Gemara says, it's not a relay, oila, you have a keres, it was an azayo, you have a toyo, ben yoima, my. Me and me, do we say, shem oila, kavla levayu, he accepted to bring an oila, I do a matzah omelet, I know mitzvah mehamufcha be'ina l'me'eved. My intention was to do mitzvah mehamufcha. I don't want to bring a bird. I went and I spent the money on a big ox. I'm not interested in doing a mitzvah that's second rate, not mitzvah mehamufcha. So the Gemara goes to the boya after he asked the question, how the poshta, he answered the question. What's the answer? Gona ganev tota asmoi bekebeth l'rabonon v'oil t'oif. The blood of an Azariah. And the answer to the question is, a certain person spent a lot of money on a hidden mitzvah, and I damaged that he shouldn't be able to do that mitzvah, I say to him very simply, I'm going to give you back to do the mitzvah, take a bird instead of a big shark.
Okay, I'm going to bring, give me back dog, I'm going to bring my own bird.
What's that? What did I damage you? What's the damages that I created to you? I took away your carbon oiler. I'm paying you back your carbon oiler. Here's your carbon oiler.
You took away a short.
I took away a short.
I also bring a bird.
Huh?
I'm
going to
take
the
bird.
No, I have an obligation to the carbon oiler. And this that you bought was the midst of the carbon oiler. You see,
but also the last thing
you said,
that would be different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then you said, you said quite the thing.
Right. Harei Allah, here he said Harei Allah Allah. So therefore what? You have the obligation to bring the carbon oiler. Are you bringing it? What?
Okay,
I said Harei Allah.
Allah.
But you're here, you're master. You came back out. No, you're master.
You gave me which one? Allah.
You're master. Once you're master, you came back out. So come along, the Maram Min. And just take a look at this Shuvan Maram Min. This is an unbelievable Shuvan. This is what he writes. Kuf Yud Gimel the Maram Min. You, Reuven, Kona Estrig Godel. Reuven bought a big, beautiful Estrig. You hear, Alan, Estrig's got to be a big one. Okay? The Yafa, the Hidden Mitzvah, the Dominic Karim, he spent a fortune of money. He bought Shimon, he ma'abda, he posla, he lakha, shechai, the child, the liquor, the Estrig Acheres. So Reuven says, find me one exactly like the first. I want to do Hidden Mitzvah. And Shimon says, no, I'll buy you an Estrig. I damage an Estrig, I'll buy you an Estrig. Nearly, that didn't Shimon. Shimon's right to pay him back any effort he wants. Why? Because we learned in Merubah.
Doesn't matter whether he was your tail or not.
No, it's before Sukkot, the story happened. Before Sukkot. Yeah? So suddenly, everything that everybody thought, the Maram Min's right, just the opposite. And he has a very strong source, the other Gemara. But the Maram Min doesn't want to be outdone. I know everybody's very disappointed with the attack. What?
Something else.
Why is it different? Says the Gemara says, if I damage the mitzvah, I pay you back the mitzvah. Finish. What's different?
Let's say he didn't buy it. Let's say he was shopping with the Endron by his store. And I go and I knock on the Endron of a beautiful $300 Endron. So look, he broke the Endron. And I bought one for my kid from the street. I give him the Endron. I bring him to take this one.
But maybe it's different, your case. Because you see, like they pointed out, Orpo just pointed out that in our case it can't be exchanged anymore. In other words, it's already purchased for the mitzvah. So, and that's like the case when you will mafresh the shor. But in your case, it's still being sold. It's not an eschid mitzvah. It's an eschid oimid l'mechira. I definitely can see a distinction between the two cases. It's a very, very good point. Very, very, very good point. But the Maram Min knows that all of us are extremely disappointed with Tzak. So he's right. I mean, we are, and it's very hard to understand. So you know what Maram Min is going to do? Wait, so Maram Min makes everybody feel good. There's a cancellation question. The cancellation is as follows. He says, what do you do with the Estrig after Sukkot? What do you make from it?
Jelly.
He says, whoa. He says, one second. He says, the Estrig you damage is a big Estrig. Well, you're paying back with more. So from the big esrog, I would have gotten a lot of gems. From the small esrog, I'm going to get a little gem. So he says the difference in value between the extra jelly that you have an obligation to pay. Huh? You're right. I'm not kidding. I'm kidding. I wouldn't kid around.
You just go collect all the estrog and everybody's in shul.
No, then probably everybody used their own estrog. What do you mean? They actually come up and he says, wait, let's do that. Masha estrog had God will show the bedomim limkar achachach, framing a cost. The fact that after you understand it's going to have a greater value, yoy to domim, the utfim chai the chalma, show the body the chalma, your mama chihizik. Right? Okay, but then he says there's a problem, because even by the shur of the oil, you have the ur, and the ur has greater value. So how do you get out of paying the ur? So we have the whole discussion over here, if it's such as hanah, so on and so forth, if you're only giving it away to the kohen, and then he has a discussion, maybe it's a kohen from a different mishma, from your own mishma. He has a whole interesting discussion. Till the end of the tshuva, he discusses this question. Okay, very interesting. Comes along Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden is bothered with everybody's question that everybody here asks. Take a look at page number 9. Rabbi Yaakov Emden is extremely bothered by your question. Take a look what he writes. Shesha Alta. Rabbi Yaakov Emden is bothered by the question that everybody here asks. He says, the question regarding the etrog, right? And tshuva. He says, Dove zeh kanishal ol maramin, beheshev. He says, you don't have to pay, and just a regular etrog, and he bought a proof from the Gemara Meruba. Look at the dak. Elani is daiki shkogoi hi biyadoi. So comes the maramin, the chacham tzvi. Chacham tzvi says, I mean, again, maramin is much earlier than him, but he says it's a mistake. The hosan ein loy domim. The Einabas Mechir is that how could he compare it in case of the carbon? A carbon, once you mafresh the shor for a carbon, you can't sell it. So you can't sell it. What's the only value that it has? One value. To do a mitzvah. A mitzvah. I replaced your mitzvah. I gave you a birth. I replaced the mitzvah. You have an obligation. But on the other hand, listen very well, when it comes to the etrog, if the day before Yom, if a person realizes he spent $500 on that trick and he doesn't have any money left to buy it and give it to his wife, the Yom, what is he going to do? He'll quickly sell the estrog and buy a $100 estrog and use a few $100 left to buy a gift for his wife. So this estrog is a marketable item, and it's an item with full value. So how is this compared to the case of the shur? That's the question that he asked, and the Chacham Tzvi very, very strongly disagreed with the Maramin. Okay, and he has a proof. You know what this proof is? Here. It has a full value still. It's not a mitzvah. It has a full value. And the Chacham Tzvi comes along, and the Chacham Tzvi says,
unless no one would pay the price.
Nobody would pay unless it's a Miller Yontif. Fine, but whatever you can get for it, but don't tell me you can give me back a $20 estrog because it's a mitzvah.
I mean, how much is the
Hiddur
mitzvah worth in the cow?
What's that?
How much
would he pay for the mitzvah? Fine, but the point is that it has a much greater value than an oyster.
Also, you have to say, it wouldn't be the difference, people will bring oyster.
Fine, but whatever the number is.
There's a number. There's
a price. Fine, but we can debate what the number is, but whatever the number is, it's far greater than saying that you can replace the estrog with a simple estrog, with a kosher estrog. I just want to show you what his proof is, just one second. So the Chamsi says, look at the next stop, he says, Tez, I'll prove it to you. He says, the illi gonna say the Torah mechadre, if a person steals a say the Torah from his friend. Ba'avashava elav ziz, it's worth 1,000 ziz. Machnus kiduroi, it's hidda, klaf yofa, it's a beautiful klaf, yoyno, excellent ink, lavava, a woman. Hayala bazaar, will anybody ever imagine or suggest, shayyifta haganavata, but say the Torah, shayna hodi, that I gonna steal from somebody $50,000 say the Torah, they take a very cheap say the Torah and they pay him back. Say no, you wanted a mitzvah, you got back a mitzvah. The answer is not true, because if I have a sefer Torah, the Gemara says that you're not supposed to do it, but there are cases. You can sell the sefer Torah for the value of, you can get money for it. So he says as follows, if something retains a value, as long as it retains the value, it's, even though it's a mitzvah, you can get the money, the Chamsi says. But if on the other hand, something can't be sold anymore, so the only value it has is the value of a mitzvah, then the Chacham Tzvi will agree that's the case of the Gemara. You hear the two cases? You hear?
Yeah.
Right? Got it.
So what's the deal with the Sukkot then? When it goes after Sukkot,
yeah,
it doesn't have a mitzvah anymore, there's no value in it.
Well, we'll say that again?
They're short.
Yeah.
If it's during Sukkot, there's no value to it.
Correct.
After
I guess
Sukkot,
every day.
There's no value. Value.
Correct.
Right? So you couldn't, if you...
just a jelly, that's it. I mean, after Sukkot, it definitely doesn't have a value. But we're saying here that as long as Sukkot is not over, there still is a value. I just wonder every day the value must go down less. What's that?
If it's the first day or the third day?
That's every day.
No, I imagine the value probably goes down because there are less buyers every single day. Every day as Sukkot passes, I imagine, I mean, in the beginning there are many, many buyers. I mean, the truth is, I'm not going to go into this question, but there's another fascinating question that none of us dealt with yet. The Ksai asked this question. The Ksai says that by the case in the Gemara of the Shor, why doesn't Hegdish, why doesn't the Beit HaMikdash, the Gizber come and say you're stealing from the Hegdish? Because the Hegdish is supposed to get a Shor. So there's a whole question if Hegdish has, if somebody damages, steals from Hegdish, if Hegdish can have a tree or not, there's a disagreement, there's a choice, there's a mayor. But it's not for right now. But I just want to show you one. Go ahead. No, once you're Magdash, it's your Shor, it becomes your personal obligation. You can't do it. Take a look in that piece. And if you want to see it clearly spelled out, the Chamsri, in the Chamsri, clearly.
Yeah,
in this case, you can't do it. But I want to just tell you one fascinating shot which I saw, which I found very interesting, because the truth is, you really have a bit of a sphere between the Gemara, between the Rishonim. So I found that something which I really, really enjoyed that I wanted to share. Take a look at the next page. There's a Shailas Teshuvas Karen Ludovic, and we'll conclude with one more point, which he takes the disagreement, because the problem is that by the time you finish with the Chamsi, the Maramint has no words. And, you know, the Maramint, there's also a problem. So how will Poseikin question is an interesting way. This is really Shuvot. You know, it's hard to say when it comes to Shuvot who you actually, you would have to look a bit further, see what the others have to say about it, see what the different circles. It's not something which you're going to find clearly. The truth is, you do have a bit of a discussion about the subject in Arachayim. I don't recall, it might be Tafresh Nunvav and Hilchas Lulav by the Shai Tshuva brings down 2-3 to begin. Yosef also speaks about this. You have to look a bit further. But just for a concept, I want to share one more very, very beautiful concept.
What's
that?
Recent.
More recent. But I just want to show you this one very interesting thing that he says. On the left column, that's the top paragraph, Omnam. He says, good, the Chamsi goes takes Maramins apart. But you know, it's a very difficult thing to do to a Rishon. Look at this, what he says. Yet Makayim Divrei HaMaramin, he tries to make heads and tails out of it. He says, Tehine Be'enet Yesh Lohavim, my time of the Rav of the Masik began of Moshe Chodin Asher Bekeret. What's the real reason? In my time of the Moshe Omele, I know Mitzvah Amivcha Be'inu Me'evet. He comes from a different angle. He says, the Gemara says, you can't argue, I want to do a Mitzvah Amivcha. Why not? You went and spent $1,000 on a shirt. You want to do a Mitzvah Amivcha? I went and I wounded for you. Why can't you do a Mitzvah Amivcha? Why not? What's the answer to that question? Yesh Loima, look at this very fascinating thought that he says. Afima Shamati, Siyata Deshmaya, skip over a line, Maisa Be'echa Sheshochat Kebekod Chaveri Bekitsa. The famous story, a person went and stole his friend's mitzvah, the Kitsi Adah, right? So what happened? Rav Gamliel said, you gotta pay Asar Zahuv, right? So he says, that's a very interesting question. Mechaya Tzmur Rabzi, I have a very interesting question. Hayisochat Tzchar Mitzvah Lo Yehei Yelu Yud Zahuv? A mitzvah is only worth 10 zuvim. You know what a mitzvah is worth? A mitzvah is more valuable than the greatest diamond. Why was the mitzvah only worth 10 zuvim? Ulami says, however, Osa Shapir, it really all works out well. The Be'emet Omru Chazal tell us, Chishev Lashish Mitzvah Venenis, the person who tried to do a mitzvah, then he had an oinus, but very often he didn't do it. Malo hakosu kiliyosay. So the Torah considers it like you did it. Look how beautiful this works out. He says, if that's the case, if you tried to you stole the mitzvah from your friend, so the friend got to the mitzvah anyway. So you should pay you nothing. But he says, still nichle leinish lemed mitzvah v'poyel mamish, but not through somebody else, right? Okay. Look how beautiful he works this out. He says, if I had an obligation to bring a carbon, and I was mafresh, I bought a mitzvah and hamufcha to the carbon. And now my friend went and sold for me, and I can't bring my mufkadig carbon, and he gives me back a birth. And that's what I bring. In Hashem's eyes, what did I do? I worship. So he says, if that's the case, he doesn't have to really change. On the mitzvah min amufcha, I got that mitzvah anyway. On the mitzvah, fine, thanks to home. But on the mitzvah min amufcha, once I spend the money, I got it anyway. This is by the Yetzirah, he says. When the Maran Mitzvah was trying to say the Tzaddik, he went and he spent all that money on the Yetzirah. And after you spend all that money on that Yetzirah, what happens? What happens after you spend that? Somebody else damaged it, and now you didn't have the ability to use that Yetzirah. Which Tzaddik do you get? Would be the mitzvah min amufcha. Right? A sage Torah says it's something that a person purchases in a totally different way. It's not like you say, okay, I'm going to buy a expensive Sefer Torah, and every time the Sefer Torah is used, I'm going to do a mitzvah min amufcha. That's not the way it works. Sefer Torah, you went and you bought, you did the mitzvah, and you still have something of value. So there you can't say this Torah anymore. That you've got the mitzvah, min amufcha, that you say the Torah every time. Yeah? But it's just a very interesting pshara to work it out. But Al Kapanim, I would say, with the case of the Yisroel, the taxes you have to pay. The question is why, right? That's the only question. Why? So you have to read it into the Gemara and see in the Maramin to try to create all the numbers. But then on the other hand, the guy can always take him like Maramin if he has to pay. So it's not so simple. It could be mighty moment based on this case. But it's just so fascinating. I'll just conclude with one more case on the bottom. Is the Das Kedoshim. The Das Kedoshim was written by the rabbi of the city of Bechash. Very beautiful thought he had. He said somebody commissioned another sofer to write a Sefer Torah for him. He says, I'll give you extra money if every time before you write the name of Hashem you go to the mikvah. That was a deal he made with him. And then he bought a Sefer Torah and he found out he didn't go to the mikvah. So what does he do in such a case, huh? What does he do in such a case?
He says
whatever money gave him extra for going to the mikvah, right? Whatever money you make for going to the mikvah, doesn't have to pay. Alright, so we'll talk about a hefker shein nikah. It's an interesting question, but here was a deal. Maybe for the real yodei, you know, sefer Torah, it's a hefker nikah, you know, when they read the shame, they have all this feeling possibly. But you have to really work that concept through very, very well. Okay. It's not nikah. For me, it's not.